This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
Name any word in less than a second. I will tell you how many letters are in it. But I cannot do anything mechanically. I don't even know how to put a game together for three-year-olds.
And the Bulldog.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
And so we graduate from the combine. But don't you dare sit down. It's legal tampering time. And then free agency. And, oh, the draft. And the schedule. Eventually there is a break.
There's some time to go fishing. Or whatever it is you like to do in your spare time. I don't know why I landed on fishing, but I did.
Nothing against it.
No, I don't do it, but I have enjoyed it when I have done it.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I'm thinking about Jimmy Johnson. Retiring today. So I think of him as someone who's living in the Florida Keys and just sitting on a boat with a line in the water.
I did a double take, but I did think about the math, and it's right that he was at Fox for 31 years.
Okay, explain that to me, because I also was stunned by that number and like got out my phone calculator. I'm like, okay, let me see here. 2024 wow. Minus 30, 1993?
Well, it's 25, but 93, he coaches the Cowboys to a Super Bowl win, and then he's out. They broke up right after that.
Oh, right, and he did. Okay, yeah, good. Thank you.
Barry Switzer.
I just looked at, you know, when he last coached and picked up from there, and that's 25 years, and I missed that he was there and then went.
Oh, you know what, though? Right, Miami.
Yeah, he's 99.
That's right. 63-7.
So in,
right?
Yeah, 62-7 against Jacksonville's his last game in the night that those playoffs that year. So
maybe he did work for them.
That's what I have to think
before and during that.
Yeah,
you know, like they go out of the playoffs and he comes into
something. Yeah,
okay, that's probably right.
Yeah, because I also struck because you know I guess this is me. I don't know what your motivation was. Mine was I'm not that old. In some degree, I'm like 31 years.
It makes you think that he's been retired for that long, which he quite hasn't. He hasn't been retired for quite that long.
Right. It's got to be that.
Did you know, like, Matt Ryan, for one, goes into the booth before he's retired, like the season ends, and then he's there? Guys like that.
Right.
Maybe J.J. Watt did that. I don't know. He's there now.
I didn't go through Johnson's bio thoroughly enough to see if he debuted there, but that timeline would make sense. When he was out in Dallas, maybe he did some studio work there and then ended up going back in. Because it was kind of surprising when he went back, because he sounded like when he left Dallas, like he was going to be very happy just being on a boat for the rest of his life. So it would make sense if he dabbled in TV before getting back into coaching. So that timeline makes sense then.
So, right, June is
anyway,
kind of a,
so fishing.
A break.
Sorry, didn't mean to get off on a Jimmy Johnson tangent so early anyway.
Did you watch much of the combine?
I was out a couple of times on Friday and Saturday, and it was on where I was. At one point, I think on Saturday, I did turn it on for a bit, but I didn't. You know, I mostly followed along on Twitter with the freak show that my safety dude from South Carolina, Emin Worry, put on. And
that was Friday.
Okay. And then I thought I was going to see Milroe do some stuff, but I don't know, maybe somebody changed the channel in the bar I was in. But I saw him throwing a football and thought, like, oh, he's going to do some drills. And then I never saw it, so I don't know how that went. I know he didn't run, which I was bummed out about because I thought him running would be a story if he ran a really fast time. And, you know, I'm rooting for him to get picked in the top 16.
For money. So that you can win money for me. Top 16.
And I like the I mean, I made the bet because I like the player. I like the prospect, and I like the idea of some team being intrigued by his skill set.
You know who Lance Zierlein is?
Yes.
He did a mock draft today. Did you read it?
I did not.
He has Shedeur Sanders going 29th.
Yeah, that's tough for us, Jalen Milroe in the top half of the first round bettors.
Dart, it sounds like, could go mid-first round. I saw him a little bit on Saturday. He's got the good name, good face. You know, he's kind of all set. Jackson Dart, you know, that's a guy you'd want.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a guy you'd want, right? It's tough to watch. I'm interested in the results, too, but I was with a group of guys on Saturday with it on as well, and you know, you're watching the guy run, and it's like 4.41. Oh, the next guy runs, it's like 4.43. Oh,
right.
You know, just oh.
I heard Steve and Chris on my way in on One Bills Live talking about a video that they create on the Combine show that airs on NFL Network, where they will superimpose all of the players at a certain position, say like running back or wide receiver, and show their 40s all at once, and like, you know, the separation is just so minuscule, you know,
right.
it's just not a lot of, you know, very rarely do I watch one of those things, even like the record-breaking run from last year with Xavier Worthy, and think like, wow, that guy's really flying. I mean, they're all really flying.
Like, except for the guy that turned his ankle.
Right, that was tough.
Gunnar Helm.
Oh, I did see that. I saw that, and like, you know, that's one of those things where you make a sound when you see somebody's ankle do that. Like, I mean,
he ran anyway.
Yeah,
he ran twice.
Ran and did all the other. I think he did everything else too, all with that sprained ankle. It was pretty ghastly looking.
Also, by the way, with the 40, I'm not sure if this is true at all positions, but running back, receiver, they tell you it's like one of the least predictive statistics for guys, like how they're going to be in the pros, because it just seems counterintuitive, right? Like faster is better. Bigger is better. Faster is better. But all the different factors, the different drills, age, weight, all the different things, like 40 time comes down pretty low, you know, in terms of like what's predictive for a pro career. So even that, knowing that, and I'm watching it, I'm just watching guys who kind of look all the same, big and fast, and there's their time. And you also know, or you might know, that I'm not sure how much this is going to mean to their draft status. One running back who ran a slower time, Caleb Johnson from Iowa, one of the Iowas. And so 4.58 or something like that. And oh no.
Right, he's in real trouble.
4.58, but he's like the biggest of the guys, or one of the big, he's 227 maybe, and I don't even know how bad that is, or what it's going to do to a team.
Right.
You know, maybe if he was going to go in the second or third round probably, does this really change that? Does it necessarily change that? No. I'm not building up to, like, the combine is irrelevant or anything, but yeah. A lot of it, it's just the NFL. Of course, we know a lot of it, a lot more is made out of what's happening than maybe there needs to be.
When you have stories that make the rounds after players get chosen, I think Gabe Davis was one of these, and I think Khalil Shakir, for Buffalo examples, I think it's somewhat, well, I don't know how well known it is. I know I've heard Brandon Bean was rooting for those guys to run slow. He already liked him. They already had interviewed him and talked to him, and they were hoping that his time wouldn't push them up the board. So when you get to a play, and I'm sure, I would guess anyway, I can't be sure of it, but that Brandon Bean does not have the market cornered on that sort of mentality.
Like, no, I
like this guy. I've watched his tape. I hope he doesn't run so well that some team picks him before the value I have on him.
We talked about that a lot last year because that seemed right, and then he even said it, right, later?
Yeah.
So...
I don't know.
Like, but are we in the receiver market? I guess. Not like last year.
No, not like last year. But I think they're going to have to do something. It probably will be a low-rent veteran, I might guess anyway. But that all kind of depends. Like I've said a few times, if they swing big and make a Myles Garrett trade, I don't want to say I don't need a defensive tackle, too. Maybe that would be a great 1-2 punch if I can nail down a huge upgrade like that and still use the 30th pick on a defensive tackle. I did see a mock draft today from PFF that had Kenneth Grant there at 30 for the Bills, and that was the pick that was assigned to them in that mock draft exercise. So that could make a lot of sense, or it also could make you feel like, all right, I'm... Well, you're not going to have the 30th pick if you make the Myles Garrett trade, probably.
Probably not.
I should stop in my tracks right now. But anyway, you spend assets, multiple assets, to get a guy like that on your team. That might bring receiver back into the mix with a day two pick or something for them, because they're still going to have, man, there's a spot there that Amari Cooper was occupying that I think they should want to fill. I don't know how big a piece they want to plug into that hole, but I think there's a hole there that I'm not willing to just assume Keon Coleman steps up and fills. Because
a lot of things are interesting about it, and I'm a little hesitant, especially like first conversation we had on the first day of the week, because we've just spent so much mileage on receiver. And this year, if you were somebody that thought the receiver thing was just completely out of control, like, what is this every day? Why are we so fixated on that position? This really was your year, because they didn't really nail it at receiver. Like, Coleman he wasn't a home run. Cooper, they went and got, he wasn't a home run. You know, Hollins is kind of limited. Shakir, the floor is high, but it's fine, right? Can I do that? So if you kind of thought the wide receiver, enough about wide receivers this year, you know, you kind of looked right, because they did not. And even Kincaid, well, at least Kincaid will, you know, lead them in production, didn't happen. So nobody really shined, but they won 13 games, and it's not why they lost to the Chiefs.
And they scored a ton of points doing it too,
you know, right? Franchise record, right, in scoring. So that was last year, and now we go into this year, and I feel almost the same way. I think it's less likely that they draft a prominent wide receiver in this draft, maybe Saturday or even maybe Friday. But I think last year that felt almost like inevitable because of how that season ended and just, all right, you've waited long enough here. Let's go get a wideout. Diggs.
And the Diggs trade had been made by then, of course.
Right.
And the caliber of the class, too. Like it was a good year for our perceived need of theirs, and a lot of their fans, I think, felt the same way. And there were a lot of guys to talk about. Like it was a good class. It was, you know, thought to be one of the best receiver classes, very deep, and therefore, like, you know, you got an opinion on this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy. I mean, we went around and around. I loved Keon Coleman last January, and by March, I was like, I don't know. not crazy about him as an idea. You had enough guys there that you could pick 2, 3, 4. I ended up on Worthy by the end, and that, you know, that didn't go well for me.
Well, it did and it didn't. It didn't go well for them.
Well, right. I didn't get what I want. I didn't get the result I wanted.
Liking him doesn't seem so bad.
Right. No.
So how hard – let me say this and then say the next thing. How hard do we need to work this time around at that position? And the class is seemingly very different than last year, although not all those guys were great, as it turned out. That's to be expected. But how hard do we want to work at the Bills? Which one, you know, how much are they going to pay? Like, how high in the draft will they do it? All that kind of thing when they just had that season. And sure, they'll probably draft somebody or sign somebody, but that doesn't have to amount to something that looks really different than last year. They will still want Coleman and Kincaid, two recent investments, to blossom. And they're not going to do that by replacing those guys. So I think that's still going to be a priority. And I would think that they are confident enough. I know how they sounded about Coleman, but confident enough that they'll want to make that effort. The thing with them, wide receiver is a microcosm of it. And it's because it's been, how do you want to draw the line? 5 years now, or six even, six playoff teams in a row, five division title teams in a row. and the same story every year, like losing in the playoffs. And, okay, so this year I have needs. Maybe receiver is one, defensive line, defensive back. You know, I've got these needs. And there are times when I just think, is it going to be different? Like, if you want – everybody seems to agree, defensive tackle, right? Kenneth Grant, mm-hmm. that other mock I mentioned earlier, the guy's name is Walter Nolan from Ole Miss. Yep. It makes sense. Can you get yourself to a place where you go, okay, now they're all set. Like next year will be different. Now next year they have this. Even if it's an edge rusher. Oh, well, they don't have like a big impact edge rusher. Yeah. Okay, so let's say they did. Even if it's Myles Garrett. I mean, that's quintessentially what that would be. You can't, maybe it's the difference. Maybe something else that we wouldn't be talking about is the difference. We won't know for so long.
Right.
And last year there was that. Receiver was really fun to talk about. The Diggs trade was kind of shocking. And, you know, Davis leaving too. Okay, I can play around with this. I've got 10 to 20 names even that are realistic for me.
Yeah, draft, trade ideas. Yeah.
So much.
It was all there. Yeah.
And this year, it's very different from that. And they just had like a record-setting season without, you know, scoring, if you will, in that area. So, I mean, every day can be different. And today has been a day for me. We're really the weekend with the combine. Like, okay, the Bills need players. They're going to draft guys. Is this really going to make it feel like things will be different this time? I don't know. It's still Allen, it's still McDermott, there's still Mahomes, there's still Lamar. Like, I don't know what they'll do that will sort of be convincing to me in this way.
Yeah.
Next year, there's no way to know.
Yeah, I think an established player like a Garrett or a Max Crosby or, I mean, I'm hearing Michael Parsons' name. I don't know how realistic any of that is. It seems possible, certainly. I still think Garrett will get moved. I don't know about the timing. It could be June before he gets moved, or July, who knows. Or even camp, you know, you push it into August if you want, when it really sort of gets to a crisis point for the Browns, if it goes past the draft. Like, once you get past that signpost, there's no motivation to get assets that you're going to use in the 2025 draft because it's over. So that's why I mentioned, like, it could kick the can all the way to August at that point if something doesn't happen before then. But you get somebody that is established, I think you don't have to be right about it, but you can feel, I think, more like, okay, there's a difference-making player. And no, I'm not going to know until probably the middle of January or later whether or not it provided me what I really needed. Because if I'm on the same sort of collision course that I've been on the last 5 years, I'm going to maybe need to get past the Chiefs again in the playoffs. And is Garrett going to be able to do, or Crosby or Parsons or whomever, Khalil Mack if you want him, going to be able to do what Von Miller was brought here to do 3 years ago and couldn't do because he got hurt, which is close out a game in the playoffs against them. Get me a three and out and get me the ball back so I can kneel it out, or I can go down and get my field goal and get out of there. That's to me a very different idea. Again, you don't have to be right about assuming it would be different, but you have a track record. You've got established players. So you bring that in and you feel like I'm closer to having what I need. You draft an edge rusher at 30, he could be Jared Verse or he could be Boogie Basham. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to get. So that is sort of, that feels more speculative. Whereas, like I've said a few times, you swing the Garrett trade and then you want to just run everything else that you had back there back next year. I don't love that, but I'm over here with my arms folded going, all right, I see what you're doing. It's like I'm adding a blue chip talent to my roster, and the rest I'm just going to run back and feel like that one guy might make one play, and that's maybe all I need. Again, I don't think the Bills will do that, but it sort of lessens the importance of getting all. It's one of the reasons why you can be okay with trading away, like, say, a one and a three this year and a one next year to get your hands on Myles Garrett, if it costs that much, because you're getting a player that decreases your needs, I think, elsewhere on the defense.
You don't need a safety as badly, or a corner as badly because you have him, you mean?
I think, yeah. I think they were not that far off. I mean, I know they look far off from being able to do what the Eagles did to the Chiefs, but they weren't that far off themselves from beating the Chiefs. So, yeah, I mean, if Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop are my safeties and you have Rasul Douglas or some facsimile thereof, similar type bunny, similar age, similar accomplishments, he's your other corner. Yeah, I think I'm going to run that back. I'll draft some other guys. I'll fill in the depth, and Jordan Phillips will be replaced and whatever else I got to do. But I feel like Garrett is a big enough piece that it would – so, and that's one of the reasons why I feel like receiver, if they perceive it as a need, I wouldn't rule it out early, because I think if they fill a big hole on defense, they might feel compelled to get Josh something else to work with over there.
The only – reason, or the number one reason why I just would not expect receiver in the first round, is because they've just done it twice. One was a tight end, the other was the first pick of round two. I know, but they've just used their top draft asset on wideouts, essentially, and it's debatable just how well enough that's worked. But does a team, how often would a team do that 3 years in a row at any position? You know, like, that's why I'm not expecting it kind of at all there. And, you know, you're saying if there's this trade, then
that's
I don't
the
need to draft
entirely.
That.
Right.
But I don't say all that to mean that I would mind if they did that, mm-hmm. because it's still where I want them.
Yeah.
What receivers.
Just so it's clear, because it might sound like I'm trying to say too many different things at once. I think if they hold on to that pick, i.e. there's no Garrett trade or Crosby trade, any trade for a caliber of player that costs you that pick and probably more, then I think they're probably going to draft defense. But if they make that trade and they have a second round pick as their top pick on Friday, I wouldn't rule anything out, and that includes receiver to me. But if you keep your picks and there is no Garrett, Crosby, Micah Parsons trade out there to be had or be made, or you just don't like the price or whatever it is, they held on to their picks. I'd be stunned if they didn't draft a big lineman or an edge guy. Like, I think something up front is what would be picked at 30 in that case. But you get Garrett, then it's a different thing, but you don't have the pick.
That's kind of what the mocks seem to be telling us, to look forward to that, and we already were. 803-0550 is the number. Maybe you watched some of the combine or even a lot of it and had some interesting takeaway. Saying about the Bills, like, there's a feeling I have of not malaise, but just like, okay, you know, defensive line, whatever it is, like, okay, it'll probably make sense, and it wouldn't likely move me too much. Maybe shouldn't move that many people at all to sort of like what the expectations are, if they're really going to be different, because that's drafting at the end of the first round. That's how that goes. And then there's the Sabres, who, in a very different way, yeah, do whatever you want. You know, but how is it going to be different? That's kind of what I'm saying about the Bills, right? Like, show me how this is going to be different. As, of course, they've done so much winning, but then fall short. And the Sabres just cannot get off the ground. And so, yeah, do whatever you want. Okay, sure, maybe it'll make sense. Maybe it won't.
Right.
But maybe it will. And then, good, congrats.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's this week for them. The deadline is Friday. And they have games tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday to keep us occupied. At Montreal tonight, pregame at 6. Again, lines open for you. We'll talk to Sal later. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
I mean, there's a lot of run defenders in this class, a lot of guys who can play and help a team right away, be in a rotation. I just don't really see the high-end caliber athlete, caliber pass rusher in this class. Walter Nolan probably is the best shot, but you listen to people talk, and does he love ball? Is he really locked in? You know, he didn't test. Like, what kind of a guy is this we're getting? I think, and he has, you know, ups and downs on tape too, I think, that are concerning. So it's a scary class at the top. I think there's a lot of depth, though, and you'll find players who can play in the middle rounds.
Draft analyst John Ledyard on our morning show last week. Walter Nolan, there's the second time today for that name, from Ole Miss. And likewise, Lance Zierlein in his mock draft wrote about him that maturity is in question, according to the opinions of some teams, apparently. But the talent is there. Do we like that? Do you want talent or do you want maturity?
I'd like both, Mike.
We'd like both. You can have one.
Mm.
Give me the player.
I think talent, like, I'm not someone who rolls their eyes at the interviews and culture and character and all the stuff. These are high-stakes job interviews. I recognize the traps that are there, but I still would rather do that than not do it. But I think the Bills should be easing into a place where they, and maybe not even easing into it, where they have a strong enough system here that you bring someone in and you got to really try to not fit in and fly straight and do things their way, because you're going to really stand out if you don't. And that's not a nothing. What is 100% when you're talking about drafting 20, 21-year-old, 22-year-old dudes? Nothing is for certain. But I feel like they've got a strong enough situation here that you could make a guy into the best version of himself more readily than if, like, say, Rex Ryan was still their coach.
Yeah, they have credibility.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
So, you know, a guy doesn't have to take that to heart, you know, but I think I'd want to lower my desire to have that criteria met as maybe as much as it has been in the past, assuming they have that high up on their criteria, and I think they do.
They've just, and I think most people see this the same way, they've evolved to a point where they just don't have many guys that are elite. Like top five at their position. I would say it's up to three. Allen for sure, and then it might be Dawkins and it might be Benford. But I don't think they have any. Is there somebody I'm missing? I don't think they have any. Maybe Spencer Brown deserves some credit. So they're really good at tackle, but they just don't have as many stars or, you know, great players. So how do you fix that, improve upon that this year? Well, it's not easy when you draft 30th. But I think this is kind of what you would do, is you think about it in terms of talent. And maybe then in a couple of years, one smooth free agent move, one trade, three or four draft picks, in maybe a couple of years you can be at a point where you're back. Because they did have a list of guys when Hyde and Poyer were in their primes. And I don't know if you wanted ever Von Miller as a Bill, but Diggs, of course. Like they had Trey White. You know, mm-hmm. Milano at his peak. What's that? Like seven or eight guys that arguably were top five at their positions or higher, top three in a couple cases. And I don't know if you disagree, but that's not what it looks like now. And, you know, all season. And they won 13 in another division and right. AFC championship.
And we're that close.
So, right. So to their credit. But it's not saying much. I mean, everybody would want to do that, get as many top players, like the Eagles. That's the dream, and that, you know, paid off for them. You know, Garrett is, if it's doable, that's a step
right
in that direction, because he certainly is that.
Sure, he was up for Defensive Player of the Year again this year. Didn't win it, but won it last year, and is still, you're looking at still good years there. Now, that road doesn't go on forever, but it is, yeah, that's one of the very best players in the league, period. Oh, at any position. Like, if you start talking about the, you know, run through your quarterbacks, but once you start talking about defenders, you're going to get to Garrett pretty fast. I mean, really, right? Maybe you prefer Parsons, maybe you prefer TJ Watt, but, like, it's a pretty short list, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I it's a very compelling idea. I know how the Browns sound about it, and I'm still sort of expecting them eventually to do something. I said earlier already today that, like, the draft is a very important signpost for this idea. From a, you know, set the table for your off-season type of way for a team trying to acquire him, right? There is not enough, there's no assurance you can give me that, well, let's not draft an edge guy because we're going to make this trade in August. The Browns want us to wait till June, and we're going to be able to do it then. Like, that is, I don't want to live like that. So if the Browns want stuff to help them starting this year, and I don't know, maybe they don't. Maybe they feel it'll be better for them in the long run if they wait. This draft is sort of a plateau between pick 15 to 20 to like pick 60 or 70 or something. So maybe they don't see a ton of value there and would rather get picks for next year. I don't know what, and still look like, well, we told her we were going to just react to it and do it, but eventually you get worn down and you got to do what's best for your team and move on if you start to feel like the guy isn't going to show up. And that kind of stuff, like if it gets to that. But that, again, that doesn't happen in March and April. That happens in July and August.
Yeah, that's the timing is tough on Garrett. Because, you know, I recognize that teams say a lot of things that they, you know, often maybe don't really mean. But they're talking more strictly about his status with them than sometimes happens. Like, you could get... You know, we've just got to do what's in our best interest. You know, just sort of these kind of platitudes. And it would not sound like the Browns, you know, were even... They could go either way when you talk like that. This guy, though, Barry...
It's defiant.
He's defiant. Like, no, we're not doing it. He gets questions at the Combine about offers and that. And he's like, I'm not even thinking about them. Just completely dismissive. So, at the risk of being naive here... I think, like, how could he go and move him now? And if it gets to be the summer and Garrett holds out and they're just completely far apart, then he could change his tune. But that shouldn't need to happen before then. And so what if you're the other teams? I mean, can the Bills or the Commanders or the Eagles or anybody else just kind of wait that out? That's tough.
That's what I'm saying. I think that is very hard. That doesn't mean you wouldn't still want a guy of that caliber on your team, but you've made other moves. Like you've done other stuff. That's why, like, I think it's entirely believable that the Bills, you know, I don't know, maybe this Barry is just hanging up on them or not even taking the calls anymore, but any team that wants him, to me, should be compelled to put their get as close as soon as you can to what the best you're going to do is, so that if they do end up feeling compelled, despite how it'll look like they, you know, did it the opposite of what they've been saying they were going to do, if you want to nudge them to the finish line, then, you know, make it, because you should be incentivized. A, you get the great player. B, you get them in a timeline that fits the rest of your offseason. You don't have to wait to put the pieces all together because, again, you've got this kingpin guy on your team. And that certainly, from a financial aspect, if not just a positional depth chart position, would impact what you're going to do the rest of free agency and, of course, in the draft.
803-0550 to join us. Sal will be on in about 25 minutes. Sabres and Canadiens in Montreal tonight. Rematch from Saturday. This is the 300th meeting between the Sabres and the Canadiens. The 299th did not go great.
No.
They've lost to them three times this year. And that could end up just being like the difference.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, they're going to have to do some work to make it the difference, but still,
right.
Sure, it could end up being the difference. And yeah, I mean, the whole thing has been somewhat flimsy to invest in to begin with, but here we are. It's the first five-game chunk, and we spent a lot of last week. Paul, I think last Monday or Tuesday? Lindy's got this idea, 3-1-1 every five games, five-game increments, and we'll just, you know, that can get you close to where you need to be. And here we are. It's the first five-game increment. It started off great, 2-0, and then thud. And so they can't even meet the threshold. You know, I don't – modest. What it's the threshold their coach gave them and set for them. And they're already behind. Just come on. There's no way for them to get 7 points out of these five games anymore.
Now, that's the thing that's weird about that approach. What I like about it is – you know, to the players, it can maybe make it sound doable. Like if you break it up like that, maybe it sounds, I think that's got to be the point, more doable than just whatever somebody on the radio says, you got to go 20-4.
Right.
Or whatever it would be. So that part of it's fine. But once you fail to meet the goal here for the first block, then what do you do?
Like, I know,
it's supposed to be one game at a time in sports.
Right.
And this is five games at a time.
Yeah.
And then this game, I mean, I'm just kind of being me, but this game doesn't matter because I can't – I'm already a loss when it comes to the first block. So –
Well, what it means is block five, you got to go 4-1.
I don't know if I want to play this game.
Or 4-0-1 in the next block of five. So you can get 9 points instead of this. Make up for the two you're not going to get here.
I don't know if I want to play this game, the five game blocks, now that the first one has been busted. Again, we'll talk to Sal coming up at 4 today. Paul Hamilton in the pregame show at 6. We're here for your calls at 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Combine is over. We're into March. Now it's on to free agency for the Bills. Then eventually the draft at the end of April. Sure, defensive line, lots of guys to look at, deep class. The Bills will probably have some good-looking option if they pick at 30 like they're expected to. Of course, there could be trades. There was some interesting movement at the Combine, like top middle skill positions. Like what happens with Travis Hunter now? Not from workouts. I mean, some of these guys I'm thinking about and how they might get, you know, reorganized or reordered in these mock drafts are not guys that even bothered to do anything, like Genty and Hunter and the top quarterbacks. But Matthew Golden is one, so that's Texas receiver. It was his teammate, Bond, who was talking big about breaking the record. And he ran a 4.38 or something.
Right, he didn't really come close. I mean,
and they booed him.
Close. I mean,
they booed him for running a 4.3 something.
Yeah.
Because he talked up a 4, we mentioned 4.1. But it's Golden who was really outstanding in the different activities.
Right. And is thought of as like the superior route runner. Like, I think he might be a guy who we'll talk to Chris Trapasso later in the week as far as like guys that help themselves the most. But I feel like I was seeing that time Golden ran, he's already getting like most of the scouting reports I've read on him. Like, he wins with his route running and is savvy. Like, he's a good prospect. The speed might have pushed him to another level. Because, again, you know, how much are we splitting hairs here? You know, if he ran 4.35 instead of 4.29 or 4.28 or whatever he ran, how much of a difference that is. But he comes out of this thing with the top time, and that was not on his business card. So that could have a pretty positive impact on him. He might be an example of a guy that, I'm not saying this with regard to the Bills necessarily, but some team out there maybe really liked the idea of him. They've got him slotted in a certain spot and like, okay, well, that's over.
Yeah. I don't know if he gets to wide receiver one, but maybe he's like a pretty solid wide receiver two in this class at this point. Tet McMillan is the guy to beat on that list, and he didn't run, which is interesting. Maybe not a great sign. You have at running back, no Genty, but you had some of those guys looked incredible. And this is not surprising either. Like, this is something that was supposed to be true this year, the running backs in the draft. Omarion Hampton from North is a guy you like. Omarion Hampton from North Carolina.
I've not settled on a running back.
Mel Kiper is going to mix it up, isn't he? That's what he's known for. He's going to have Hampton as running back one, I predict. And then move him back.
You think so?
I do. I could see it.
Even with Genty's been like squatting on that spot for 8 months.
You always have, we'll see what Chris says, like you said. You always have guys who are, they're going to put their neck out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually my number one. I don't have my own number one, but just, you know, Mel's got his 3.0, 4.0. You can change it back.
Yeah.
Chris Trapasso, by the way, had neighbors above Marvin Harrison, at least for a while. last year, if not like the whole time. He was out there. And you, when you're a draft analyst and you come up with sort of what sounds like a hot take, I'm sure there are a lot of people wanting to call you on it. Like you're just, you know, clicks.
Just trying to get noticed.
But right. Still, like, I think the combine this year, running, not so much running back as wide receiver, but wide receiver kind of sets up for, it's not going to be a consensus. And so is quarterback. So is quarterback. So what does that look like after the weekend? You know, mixed opinions, of course. Theo Greminger on Friday said his mock drafts, Tennessee is taking a quarterback at one every time. But you had a lot of people predicting different. And I saw one today that also had Cam Ward at one to Tennessee. And then you get to Cleveland and the Giants, both of whom need their own guy. And is Sanders good enough for that? Is Jackson Dart even good enough for like a top three pick? Then, of course, you've got Travis Hunter, who that would be incredible. Do you know where you want him? So
you mean positionally?
Team.
Yeah. No, I've not really. He's. Yeah. No, I've not thought of like where should I be worried about him landing? I guess New England is up there. You know, I don't want them to get difference making. They're in free agency and the draft. They're drafting relatively high. They're going to get some. They're going to difference makers. But I feel like the best player in college football that can be a weapon on both sides of the ball. I don't need you in the division two times a year. Thanks.
That's what Theo said also on Friday because of Rabel playing tight end in his career. That, you know, he might be the right coach for Travis Hunter. I don't know. I kind of like the Jacksonville idea for him. Not that I'll be that excited to watch Jacksonville. But the fact that they have Lawrence, maybe somebody could say that you'd rather have May, I guess. But the fact that they have Lawrence maybe gets him off to a better start. It's a new coach, though, new GM. Would Jacksonville feel like they can, you know, handle the scrutiny? Like if Hunter is only playing one position, or if, you know, he breaks down, whatever happens there, that might not be the best for a team with a rookie coach.
I feel like any player, but I don't know why in my head, this player, potential two-way player, you go to Jacksonville and, like, we're never going to hear from you again. You're in Jacksonville, and I would take Drake May. I'm looking for clicks. I would take Drake May 100 times out of 100 ahead of Trevor Lawrence right now. And it's not entirely because we haven't seen May. We don't know what his ceiling is, and it may end up being below Lawrence's. But man, the money I'm paying Lawrence, I would much rather be sitting with Drake May right now. You know, that doesn't have to mean anything to the draft pick, obviously, but I'm not optimistic for Jacksonville. I mean, the coach is a little odd, I think, and Lawrence, a guy that is that talented and has been in the league this long, there's a lot of excuses being made, and maybe he just needs the right coach, and maybe this guy will be it for him, because we've seen the difference that can make. Darnold, Geno Smith, whatever, guys that looked like busts as, well, relatively highly drafted quarterbacks. Darnold certainly was, you know, not so much. But still, that they've turned their careers around. So maybe that's what Liam Cohen can do for Lawrence. But, man, 2 years ago, I was crushing on him, and I've just not been impressed with almost anything he's done since.
Lawrence.
Yeah.
Sal Capaccio joins us after the update. We'll recap the combine. How do things look to Sal with the draft coming up in less than 2 months. Listen to me. It's right around the corner.
It is.
I agree. It feels like a little bit of a stretch, but it came out. Back with Sal, Sabres and Canadiens pregame at 6 here on WGR.